Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome back to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. This is Madison Kavarna. This episode will be the second half of the conversation with Charlie and Courtney from Totten Angus. I won't keep you tied up too long in this intro, so let's jump right back into the conversation.
One other kind of, while we're talking about like your selection, I mean, you're talking about how you select, going a little off script here, so I apologize, but you know, you're selecting for these moderate framed cows. Do you find that kind of in the grand scheme of things that works well for a variety of situations, or, you know, could it kind of fit into anybody? I mean, we're drifting to bigger and heavier cattle. Do you find that these moderate frame girls still have a place to go, or maybe even these moderate frame bulls, you know, is there a demand for them out there still?
Well, what's interesting, most people think, you know, well, out west, they don't put much feed. That would be the obvious place for the more moderate frame cattle. But I grew up 120 miles southwest where our grass was had a lot more protein in it and feed value than our bigger grass here east. So what I'm getting at is that out west it almost supports a bigger cow better than east of here when your grass is half water. But people have plenty of feed, so they make up for it. But so, in my opinion, they work everywhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, oh no, you got to have a big cow if you're east here in the corn country. But
I think that, you know, we always kind of get stuck in the bigger, better, stronger, faster growing type genetics. But I think that sometimes that 1200 pound moderate frame cow that just knows how to do her job, and a lot of the times can fix a lot of problems that we maybe run into with having, you know, we're staring down the barrel of a dry summer of, you know, the grass, we're just not going to have a lot of it. And kind of what cow is going to make the best of a limited inventory without us having to break the bank of feeding her to get the same end product of that calf. So I think every size of cow has a place, and I think that a lot of the times the smaller gals tend to get the short end of the stick of, no, they're not going to raise a steer that can finish to 1800 pounds like we're seeing now. I've heard of some finishing over a ton when they finally hit the rail. No, a 1200 pound cow is not going to be able to do that, but she's going to make you a pretty darn good 1400 pound fat steer that goes, or even in your case, a calf that comes back as grass fed beef. They can do that fairly well. That's kind of all of my prepared questions, but I wanted to open things up to just other conversations that we maybe want to have today at least, and kind of just sit and chat about really kind of whatever comes to mind.
Okay, well, when we was talking about swath grazing, we move electric fence once a week. And what's interesting about that is, you know, how much labor that saves, how much time. And it don't matter if you're a big operation or if you got a full-time job in town. If you can go put up a bunch of electric fence on Saturday and just open a gate or two during the week, you know, a small operator can still have his job in town and take a decent care of his cows. And for a large operation, you know, it takes way less people to feed a whole lot of cows if you only have to go out there once a week. And we, a lot of times we divide it up. We'll have these two herds and we'll, you know, move the fence on one day and a different day. And then we might feed them a couple of days towards the end just so they don't get so bored with the feed. But one person can take care of a lot of cows if you got your work divided up like that.
Mm-hmm. We use electric fence pretty near year-round, very heavily in June and July with mob grazing, and then again in the winter, like with the weaned calves, we started the electric fence out there around the 1st of November, and we just finished that around the 1st of March, and that was with moving it about twice a week. And it really, with our mob grazing, people have always told us, oh, that's too much work, you're just tied to the farm and whatever, and with Dad and I, it takes 20 minutes a day to pull out a fence, and we already have one put in, and then we pull one out and then put in tomorrow's fence or the next day's fence, and it's just quick and easy. I mean, you can do that before you go to work if you want to do it every day.
Mm-hmm. I think with that time investment, you know, you talk, yeah, it might, maybe even if you're sitting talking, or, you know, morning coffee takes a little longer, you're sitting in the, you know, watching the cows or whatever, even if it takes you an hour, how many of us can start the tractor, fill up the wagon, drive it to where it needs to go in an hour? I maybe am not the most time sensitive person. Maybe I'm a little tardy in how fast I get to things, but I don't even know if you could get all that done in, you know, even a half hour to an hour.
And then there's so much you can do, a lot or a little. You know, we could be moving the fence four times a day and get better utilization versus, like, in the summer, I should say. And, you know, there's a lot of research that says that we probably shouldn't do a week at a time on this swath grazing. However, we see results good enough for us to continue. I mean, we're talking, what was it, 165 cow days an acre?
On the swath grazing cane.
Yeah. So, and then leaving some armor for the soil. So it's, the economics come into it, and your personal life comes into it, and where you can fit it in. But ultimately, it's been very beneficial here.
One of the things that you kind of mentioned here too, and I should have brought it up earlier, but I hadn't. So you do swath grazing on this cane, but you also do mob grazing on the grass. So walk us through, you know, your mob grazing mentality, you know, how you set that up. You mentioned you maybe do it a little longer than the books say, but kind of walk us through how that grazing plan came to fruition.
So we mob graze in June, July, and August, and we aim it for the heart of our growing season. We want the most cows on the fewest acres while the grass is growing. And that leaves us a lot of acres growing, you know, untouched for winter grazing. But so we concentrate our efforts during the heart of the growing season. And then we still have two herds of cattle, but we used to have 40 head of cows in every pasture. When you group up all of your cows, then you only have one water tank to go check when it's 110 degrees. You only have one set of bulls to go see if they're still in with your cows, or it actually made a lot less work, and you can go around one fence instead of have to have every fence ready the 1st of May when you want to turn out, you know, and just by bunching your cows into one group saved a lot of labor.
Yeah, and if anybody wanted to ask us questions, it could be a very long conversation, but ultimately there's no one size fits all prescription for mob grazing. You know, some on a dry year we might have 200 cows getting 10 acres a day, and like last year I think we averaged like 4 acres a day, and you kind of just have to watch the land and the cattle and see how to manage it yourself. And then we've had a lot of experience experimenting with different kinds of reels and wire and posts, and we've kind of learned what our favorite is, but that might also not work the best for other people. And it's very interesting. And then to see the benefit of resting ground, so with the mob grazing, it allows us to rest parts or whole pastures for a year or more. And when we say rest, we're mostly talking about the growing season, so that then we still have some clean acres with residual forage for the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
We've kind of moved away from rest. Now we start talking recovery, and recovery happens anytime there's adequate moisture and adequate temperature for your pasture to grow. So it's kind of the latest buzzword is talk recovery, not rest. But other things. Say something, let me think a second.
I've been getting interested in soil samples, so seeing exactly, getting more data to support some of our wild ideas. And what kind of brought this up initially was looking into carbon contracts. And I mean, I'm all about getting some free money and to essentially not change what we're already doing, but it'd be great if, you know, people were changing their practices to be more regenerative and carbon friendly. But we're very, very curious to see this spring some soil samples and maybe the carbon we're sequestering and differences in different pastures with different management. And then even some fields with like our swath grazing to see some of the nutrient benefits for the land.
Yeah, now I remember what I was going to say a little bit ago, but my name is on the Grass Science Coalition website as a mentor for cross the fence weaning and some different things. So you can find me on the Grasslands Coalition website if you do have questions.
I think one of the common themes that has kind of come up throughout this conversation is that realistically this type of management and just you guys in general, it always takes a little bit of wanting to be a lifelong learner, of constantly diving back into the why things work or how to get things to work better, which I think is something we can all take a little bit of token into our day-to-day life of, you know, we don't have to do the things that we did 50 years ago just because that's what we did. Kind of incorporating these new management strategies, looking at things through a different lens, I think really goes a long way when we talk about, you know, longevity of an operation or just, you know, enjoying what you do. As I feel like sometimes we kind of get caught in the, well, I just do it because I have to. Well, you should do it because you want to and you like to type of thing. So I've really liked that that's kind of come up inadvertently and both literally and figuratively through this conversation is kind of that little piece as well. But you guys do a lot of stuff with the Grassland Coalition. Can you guys kind of talk about, you know, the things that you do with them? I know you guys work with them on a grazing school and several other things, but kind of what brought that partnership to light or what are some things you work together with them on?
Well, with the grazing school, they tried it on different places. They tried it on state land where there was no cattle. And anyways, one of the originals, Dave Steffen, was one of the original people putting this grazing school together. He told the rest of them, man, you got to find a working ranch that's doing something. And so it was kind of my mob grazing is kind of why they picked us. And they picked us. We didn't go find them. But anyway, so they kind of make me tell my story every year. And it's I'm not that good at it.
it's always nice to be friends with the extension and the NRCS office, and then these kind of opportunities come to us sometimes. And then it also, you know, we've met so many people with the students and the staff coming here. It seems like every year we can learn something new and benefit from them being on our land. And then also, they put on so many trainings every year. This year, we've been a lot more interested in the controlled burns. Maybe we'll be having a controlled burn pretty soon. But there's just so many resources out there.
And people might not realize with this grazing school, we've been taking 40 head of cattle out there, pinning them up in little pens, and then the students got to go separate them.
Have a management plan and then measure how much they eat. And
anyways, that made us select for better disposition yet if you got 60 people walking through cattle and little electric fence beans.
I think that's one of the cool things about the grazing school is a lot of people think that it relates back just to land management, but you really learn a lot about cattle management through there. I took part in a grazing school out in Wall, and again, coming from Northwest Iowa, where we have grass up to your waist by, you know, middle of July, nothing's been on it, to Wall, South Dakota, where we are in the short grass prairie, and it was little. I walked out there and we did our first day, and I my jaw about hit the ground, because I was like, how are we going to graze this? Like, how is this going to work? And I think that going forward, there's just an important thing to remember, is that there's things out there like that through different organizations that are literally there to help you learn. And you talked about the prescribed burns, and what, you know, that's the thing that it seems like it's the gateway drug into a lot of different management things. Kind of what got you into the prescribed burn? Is it to kind of eradicate cedar trees for more grass for the cows? Is there something else that you're looking for there?
Mostly eradicate cedar trees, and they're just, we mechanically cut a bunch of these trees. Like, for everyone you cut down, like 100 comes to their funeral. And we got side hills just covered with like 3 foot tall cedar trees now. And if we don't do something, we ain't got no grass left. Bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the one thing that if you've never been to this, primarily in this part of South Dakota, it's spreading now of just how big of an impact the cedars are having on not only just rangeland in general, but for those who are trying to get rangeland to graze on, they take up a lot of room and they just end up coming up everywhere. So
and mob grazing and fires have some similarities to me, because like with mob grazing, it looks like we're not leaving a whole lot behind, but it forces the cattle to eat things that they wouldn't seek out otherwise, and then so you're kind of taking everything. And with the grazing school, you really see, you know, you take an inventory of what plants are there before you let your cattle out, and then the next morning you see what they ate and how much they ate, and then just knowing that, you know, when we manage the land or possibly have a fire and you see stuff come back that you've never seen before, and just knowing that the seeds were always there, it just needed the right environment to prosper is just very, very neat.
Mm-hmm. And before we started mob grazing, we had no idea what cows ate. When you start moving the fence every day, and that first time you go across that pasture and you find a hillside that has like a full acre of solid poison ivy, and you're scared to get off the four-wheeler, but you do it anyways, and you come back the next day, and it's grazed the hardest. The cows really like poison ivy. Mm-hmm. Well, it's got a poisonous name. Why would you even bother to look it up? But the South Dakota book tells you it's pelable forages. I looked it up after they ate it. I didn't look it up before they ate it. I'm like, they're going to die? So, you know, what am I going to do? And anyway, we've changed this one hillside to, it's mostly big blue stem by mob grazing through there. But the poison ivy, it ain't good for me, but it don't hurt the cows. Mm-hmm. So I guess. But we've seen a lot of things, and it took like 10 years before we've seen the switchgrass come back. We don't even know where the seed come from, because there just wasn't any out there. And after about 10 years, pretty quick, all the way down the draw, there's a little bit of switchgrass. And like I say, she said it looks grazed hard, but when you're out there in July, it's already waist high, so the plant got to grow up once before you know, it got to kind of do its thing before you grazed it off. It ain't like season-long grazing. I tell people it's like sitting in your car and you keep hitting the starter but never let it run. You finally run your battery dead till your car ain't gonna run. Well, when you graze off a plant every day and you're not feeding the roots, and the roots are its battery and the leaves are the solar panels, you're finally gonna kill it just like your dead car.
I think too, when we start to think about alternative grazing strategies, you know, like the mob grazing, the swath grazing, it really forces the cattle to graze smarter and kind of figure out how they're going to go and get the nutrition that they need, because it's there. But a lot of the times I compare them to toddlers. They're going to walk out, they're going to find the Snickers bar that's out there, and they're just going to eat that all summer long.
Sometimes the Snickers bar is a Creeping Jenny plant. On this AI pasture, the first thing they eat is Creeping Jenny, and that'll be the only spot, and it's old gold background, so it has plenty of Creeping Jennies. But it surprised you what cattle like, mm-hmm. and some of them weeds are their favorite. Mm-hmm.
And then some would probably question if we're hurting like the calves gain for like weaning, and I think the answer is no. And then even back to across the fence weaning, people will say, oh, you know, you're gonna lose weight grazing your calves and not feeding them hard. And it's actually the opposite. By not stressing them, we don't lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually continue to gain when the stressed calves will lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And get sick and lose more weight. And it's just so interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of animal behavior that goes into everything too. I mean, with grazing and picking different plants of... It's funny to watch calves learn from mom the odd plants that we wouldn't think of. Because, you know, if there's a cow that goes and picks the thistle buds when they're red and pink, her calf will go back and do the same thing. Or calves that are just around her will do that same thing. So I think there's a lot to be said of, they're pretty smart creatures if we let them. Mother Nature made them that way. So kind of let them go out and do the work for us. But, you know, anything else?
Well, yeah, I should have took you on one more tour this morning, but... About the time we started cross fence weaning was also about the time that, like, the Grasslands Coalition had low stress cattle handling, and so we kind of incorporated low stress cattle handling about the same time we started the cross fence weaning, and you know you can go to these schools or you can get videos online, and I'm convinced it's 90% patience and about 10% understanding the cattle. But if you go to one of these schools, they'll tell you where their eyes are set and where your eyes are set and which way your pupils run. And I think they're just killing time to make you pay for the school. But if you just really got to be patient when you're working cattle. If the slower you move, the better your day goes. But anyways, we remodeled a corral again recently, and we... Of course, it wouldn't pass Bud Williams because we got a gate in there, but we designed a corral that two people can run cattle up to shoot without ever crawling out of the fence. But our bud box runs halfway up the alleyway, so you can work cattle up the alleyway as you're feeling the shoot. But the probably the other big improvement we've made was going to low-stress cattle handling mm-hmm. workshops and kind of got over the West River rope and choke method.
Yeah, and we don't have to invite all of our friends, so we have to have other parties to mm-hmm. get together with the neighbors. I mean, we majority of the time, we plan stuff when my husband doesn't have to work, and a lot of times it's Dad, I, and my husband doing yeah. all of it, so.
Mm-hmm.
And like, say, when this even our mob grazing, it trains cattle to like you, because you're coming out there, that you're going to give them better grass. Well, we got that couple thousand acre Rough River Break pasture, and me and Courtney have been rounding up by ourselves the last couple years. And in the past, man, they'd have 10 cowboys out there, and they'd still leave 10 head of cattle when they got done. And we've kind of figured it out. We just saved some grass, and we just start opening gates, and we just kind of lead them out of there rather than chase them out of there. And...
It might take us a week, but it's only like an hour a day for a week to make sure mm-hmm. we got them all out. And I mean, when you're talking some, we cannot touch every acre of this 2,000 acres. It is rough. I mean, we stay on the path and we just hope we can holler and send a dog and get the cows to go. But it is very, the way that they learn and keep coming back to mob grazing. But I mean, I don't know how many times we have forgot to turn on the fencer. And the cattle are like, nope, we have what we need here. We don't need to test it.
They'll be back tomorrow. They'll give me some more breakfast tomorrow. I think a lot of people, too, just don't give cattle enough credit. Like, they can be pretty smart if we give them the tools to have a routine, know what this means. You know, if they see you coming, either they're moving to a new paddock or we're moving them completely. Mm-hmm. And if they kind of get that in their mind of when they see you that they get something in return, why would you run away? I mean, that's like if one of you came to my office with a bag of M&Ms. Like, I'm not going to leave my chair if you walked in my door with those. So that kind of thing, too, I think is important to remember when it comes to animal handling is if we can give them a routine that they know what to expect, it makes it a lot easier for us. Like you mentioned, you don't have to call half the county over to, you know, have a Wild West rodeo out in the pasture to get them all to come home for working. And if that falls over weaning time, now you've got calves that come in riled up, the cows are mad, and it's just a whole other thing. It's a trickle-down effect, you know, big pieces come down. But we're nearing the end of our time, so I'm sure we've been in here for a while chatting. So I will kind of open it up for any closing comments before we sign off. But other than that, I think I learned a lot and had a really good conversation. So any closing comments for anyone?
Well, I'm getting that age. I can tell long-winded stories if you need more time.
Anything, Courtney?
No, thank you very much for coming. Yeah. And we learned a lot from you, too. It's always fun to visit with somebody else. Yeah. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I know it's a lot to ask to kind of sit down and take time out of your days to do this, and also take time out of your morning to let me tag around in the pickup with you and kind of see some things. So I appreciate that very much, and I hope the listeners, you know, learned a variety of topics from you and how not everything needs to fit, you know, the perfect box that, you know, we see everywhere of, you know, everything goes together. I see Charlie Ray waving his finger at me, so I better give him a few minutes.
So I got one more theory I'm going to lay on you. So a lot of people talk about thinking outside the box. My theory is that a human being can only think outside the box for 15 minutes. If he thinks any longer than that, he builds a whole new box and jumps right in the middle of it. I try to stay on the outside of the box myself, but that's my closing. Words of wisdom from Charlie.
We should make that a tagline. You know, I think we can make this a weekly segment, you know, Words of Wisdom with Charlie.
There we go.
But with that, this has been Cattle HQ, the headquarters for all things beef cattle. You can find us on extension.sdstate.edu or on Spotify. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.